The Grinch on Mount Crumpet blowing the trumpet. Or was that Max? Who blew the trumpet when the Grinch was born again at the top of Mount Crumpet, and he came down to bring all the presents back to the little who's down in Whoville? I'd like to know, was it the Grinch who blew the trumpet, or was it his dog Max? Because Max, as you know, bore the brunt of the journey, the first journey. You might call it the Grinch's first missionary journey, anti-missionary journey, when he steals Christmas from the who's down in Whoville. We'll all say boo, ho, ho. And what happened? He couldn't take Christmas away. It came. It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And the Grinch's heart grew 10 times that day. And he thought maybe Christmas doesn't come from a store. Indeed, it didn't. And the trumpet announced the glad tidings that the merchandise was coming back to Whoville. Not that they cared, because they were singing in spite of it, which was great. Wahoo, daughters, wahoo, daughters, welcome Christmas, Christmas Day. And the Grinch couldn't believe his ears, right? So, finds out Christmas doesn't come from a store, and so he sounds the trumpet. And we're introducing today, at the end of the week, a little frivolous here. Hi, everyone. Obviously, this is Martin Zender. I don't know who else would be doing this. And we're introducing the seven trumpets in general. Now, we're not going to open chapter 8 probably until next week. I hope we get to it next week. But we're going to introduce the trumpets, because with the seventh seal come the seven trumpets. I feel a sneeze coming on, which should be, I'm going to let it come. I would ordinarily fight it, but it's kind of like a type of a trumpet. Hang on. I would ordinarily not let this, I would ordinarily not have done that. But since it's Frivolous Friday, and since I'm wearing a t-shirt, and since I'm talking about the Grinch, and since we're merely introducing the seven trumpets, which are horrible judgments, by the way. The opposite of the Grinch's trumpet. And this is the main lesson here. And I've talked to you about this before, when certain of our people have tried to insist that the seventh trumpet of Revelation is the same as the last trump of 1 Corinthians 15. I'm not even going to go there right now, because I'm not planning to light a cigar, which I would need if I were to talk about this. And I'm going to talk about it next week, so I will need a cigar. I will probably be smoking a cigar, possibly at the beginning of the week. And it's quite likely that I will have to have a little alcohol by my side. If not a glass of wine, then maybe a little shot of cheap whiskey. Because this is a troubling topic if it's mishandled. It's disastrous if it's mishandled. And it has been and is being mishandled. What's my hair doing today? I have no idea, as I look at the monitor. So let's read. We've just read from Dr. Seuss, or I've quoted from memory, that is. But now we're going to read from Joel chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, from the Concordant version of the Old Testament. Blow a trumpet in Zion! Exclamation point. For the day of Jehovah, that is Yahweh, comes. For it is near, a day of darkness and gloom. No, I kid you not, that's what it says. I know you don't expect that. When you start with such fanfare such as this, blow a trumpet in Zion, for the day of Jehovah comes, for it is near. It is a day of celebration and mirth, glee and blissfulness, peace and plenty, joy and joie de vivre. But that's not here. Instead, it is a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and murkiness. Oh, now we know that it takes place in Winburn, Pennsylvania. Didn't know that. A day of darkness and gloom, clouds and murkiness. I'll be darned. The trumpet is going to blow in Winburn, PA. Oh, no, actually, that's in Zion. I think there's a lot more sun in Zion now than there is in Pennsylvania. But anyway, the trumpet in Israel, you must look at the context of the trumpets, because trumpets announce woe, and they also announce joy. They announce conquering. They announce disaster. And to confuse these is a worse disaster. The trumpet was blown in Israel both in war and in peace. Hello, context. Moses gave them the statute that, quote, here's the statute of that guy that I would like to meet, Moses, in Numbers chapter 10, verse 9. Again, concordant version of the Old Testament. You shall come to fight in your land against the foe that distresses you. You shall shout with a bugle. The call to war. The trumpet in Israel here was a call to war. When you hear the shout of the bugle, then you go up against the foe that has distressed you. And then you distress them. This was eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, bugle for a bugle, I suppose. And again, in Numbers 10:10, our friend Moses says, also in the day of your rejoicing, you shall blow with the bugle. Interesting. In the day of your rejoicing, in the day of war. Context, context, context. How fitting then that God's great conflict with the nations should be set forth under the symbol of seven trumpets. Seven trumpets. There are a series of trumpets here, and the last are worse than the first. But again, just because we're seeing really dreadful alarms in Israel during the great affliction, we cannot let that rob us of our trumpet heralded, blown by Christ himself. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. In 1 Corinthians 15, at the inauguration of our change. I would say this as a way to tell you what trumpets have in common. It is on the cusp of change. The cusp of change. The cusp of change is announced. And there's no greater change, really, in your lifetime than the transference of the evil eons to the good eons. Again, not just the transference of eon 3 to eon 4, but of the bad eons to the good eons. And the seven trumpets are the opposite of the joy that we are going to experience at our snatching away. So I'm tempted to go into detail, just launch into detail with that, but I'm not going to do it yet. But I'm really tempted to. But I'm going to save that for Monday. And what I really want to do, basically, I'm finished. Basically, that's all I want to say to you right now. I was kind of wishing that yesterday's show was Friday's show because I felt that was really a high note. And now I feel a little bit anticlimactic, and we should just race on ahead, but I don't think I'm going to do it. I'm going to pause here, and what should I do? I have nothing premeditated right now. So what I would like to do is, what would I like to do? I'm usually in such a froth of mind that it's easy for me to go to the next thought. I should just turn this thing off. So what if it's only 7 minutes, 8 minutes? Do you care? I'll just be finished. They say when you're done saying what you need to say, shut up. That's the advice I was given by one of my good friends, a German guy, Herb Dirks, when I got up to speak for the first time, scared to death. I told you this. He told me, he said, I tell you three things. Yeah, okay, Herb. Get up, speak up, and shut up. Very good, Herb. That's spiritual advice, and I believe I'm going to take it today. Have a good weekend. Concentrate on the glories of God and Christ. Try to look through your trials into that. I know it's hard to do. Don't visit the graves of loved ones. They're not there. Look through the trials to the sequel, the outstepping God has created for us. We should be people of vision, and we should be looking ahead. Because our future is bright. Brighter than the clouds of Windburr or the clouds where you are. Remember this, and this is a cute little saying that I want to leave you with. The sun is always shining. Whether there are banks and banks of clouds, the sun is always shining. You realize this when you get in an airplane, that the sun's always shining up there. It's so great. You take off in a city like Cleveland, you poke through the clouds, and you get up there and you go, holy crap, this thing's always shining. And it is. That's the love of God. It always shines in spite of the clouds in your life. I love you.